Welcome to the Urantia Radio Podcast. It's so good to have you here. I wanted to just spend a few moments with you and talk to you about the importance of a revelation in our time, and for that matter, the importance of a revelation period. You know, I do these podcasts because the original thought was that we needed to have a beacon. For those who might remember or recall, I had another similar website, which was called Urantia Radio, which is what we streamed. I got the audiobooks of the Urantia book, and I downloaded them, and I started to stream them 24/7. And every day or every week, it would be, you know, a different part of the book. I don't think I did it in a linear way, where we just went from paper one to the end of the book. I think I did the same concept, which was to try to take parts of the book that I felt had the most general appeal, that were easiest to understand, because there's a lot of about the Urantia book that is complex when it starts talking about, particularly the papers 119, just before it gets to the life and teachings of Jesus. The end of part three, probably the most complex. But anyway, the point is that we wanted to have, or I wanted to have, a beacon. A place on the planet where people, no matter where you were, could go to and find and hear and listen to the Urantia book. The truths, the epical revelation of our time. Now, you and I, who may enjoy the reading of the book and have the book in our possession, I knew this was going to come up too. So, thank you, Spirit. You know, you and I take for granted that we have this epical revelation in our hands. There's a part of the life and teachings of Jesus. If you had a chance to celebrate Michael's birthday this past weekend, I had a good weekend. I spent so much time. I did a little bit more reading than I normally do on some of the aspects, and I was reading, and I thought, you know, I haven't read the parts about Jesus as a kid in a while, so let me delve into there. And I had forgotten the story about how when they were in Alexandria, when Mary and Joseph fled, because Herod was on a rampage and he was killing all those children. So they fled. They went to Alexandria, Egypt. And they were even going to stay there. They were considering staying there. Boy, history would be completely different if they had made. And they were close. They were convincing Joseph, you know, look, we love you guys. We want you to stay. He had extended family. Anyway, while they were in Alexandria, and when they couldn't be convinced to stay, some of the friends and relatives gave Joseph and Mary a very special book. And the book was the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures, so probably the Torah, I'm guessing. Isn't that the Old Testament, the first five books, the books of Moses? Isn't that the Torah? They didn't call it the Torah. And by the way, the word Torah doesn't appear anywhere in the Urantia book. Isn't that unusual? I'll leave that to the scholars and theologians to debate. But the book ended up being a magnet for people when Jesus was about 5, 6, 7 years old, because they gave this book. There was only 2 known copies, according to the story. And this is in paper 121 or 124 or something. If you read into the 7th year or the 6th year of Jesus' life, you read about this book that they got, and it's the Greek translation. And so Jesus taught himself to read. Joseph taught Jesus to read in Greek, because Joseph was fluent in Greek as well as Aramaic. Mary was just fluent in Aramaic. She knew a little bit of Greek. It's kind of like me. I know a little bit of mixed Spanish. Anyway. So as it turns out, this book turned out to be a big draw. People would come from everywhere to check out this Greek book of the Bible, of the Old Testament. It was a big deal. These people didn't have anything to what we have today as far as entertainment and distractions. Everything was done in real time. Anyway, there wasn't much to do. So books were probably a huge deal, especially since the printing press wouldn't come along for another 1,500 years or 1,400 years. So my point is that this book was influential in a lot of levels. First, it taught Jesus Greek so that he could plant his seeds of the kingdom with the Greeks, who were hugely influential in spreading Christianity. You know, when you see Greek Orthodox, think about the first Greeks and the way that they were able to carry Jesus' message to the world. But it was because he had this Greek version of the Old Testament in his possession. And he was able to meet all of these interesting people that would come from. So in a strange kind of way, what I see happening here is that had they stayed in Alexandria, it could have been a different path for Jesus. He may have been more accepted. He might have been more influential. He might have lived longer. Who knows? But the fact that that book ended up in his hand, and then he took it with him, and it made such a profound influence on his early life, tells me that it was on purpose. Sometimes you're given something, and that gift can end up being the biggest gift in your life. Now, I have to report sadly that the Urantia book has not been that way for me. I thought it would. That's not why I started reading the Urantia book. And I'm only sharing this with you because I'm going to take this guess that a lot of people who read the Urantia book and go through their life with the Urantia book probably encounter the same problem as the one that I am expressing here today, which is that sometimes it's even lonelier to be in possession of a great thing and being unable to share those truths with your fellow man who so desperately. It's like wanting to give water to someone and they're just not thirsty, you know, they're just. And this isn't from a position of arrogance or, assumed superiority. It's not as if I believe that the Urantia book is the answer to everybody's problems. But I do think there are enough truths in the Urantia book that could resolve a lot of our human conflicts and settle the biggest question of all, which is, does God exist? Are we here for a reason? And so that's the only reason I do these podcasts. If you notice, I very rarely mention my name. I don't sell any books. I have one book I wrote in 2015. I probably should rewrite it because it's got way too many grammatical errors for my taste. But and I know I've been working on a new one. But it's a challenge because, you know, while I do enjoy writing, I do enjoy writing short stories. I'm not a long story kind of person. And that's not my point. My point is that this continues to be a beacon to draw people who are looking for something in this world that offers them a gleam of hope. There's real sadness in the world today. There's great heroism, to be sure. There's a lot of heroism being displayed right now in Afghanistan. Not a lot of heroism being displayed in the United States on this particular issue, unfortunately. And with COVID and the way that the different segments of society are dealing with it is another great source of sadness. But on the other hand, there's also heroism in the people, the frontline health workers who are dealing with people. You hear it all the time. I'm sure you're hearing about people in your life See, we all thought this pandemic was going to be over as soon as the vaccines rolled out. That's the way we like it. See, that's the way we've always been. We've all been raised that things get wrapped up in 30 minutes or 1 hour. Occasionally, there's a part two, a season cliffhanger. But, you know, we all wanted this thing to go away. And interestingly, outside of New York, there wasn't really a, I mean, that scenario did not repeat itself, except in a couple of occasions. But in New York, it was just, it was, I believe the virus was probably in circulation in the late part of 2019, and that's probably why there was such an explosion. Not to mention people who had coronavirus being ordered to go to retirement homes. That was a mistake. And that drove up high numbers, and that put the panic in everyone. And then the rest of the country just sort of slowly absorbed, as viruses do. But the new, more adaptable variant is reinvigorating it. And while the death counts are low because treatment is effective, you know, this thing is moving through at a steady clip. And it's creating a lot of animosity between people. And who knows how it'll play out. But we're in the middle of it. We're not in the end of it. That's for sure. And again, it's you know, you think about the source of the virus and how it got possibly created, and the power players that were involved. And it's that aspect of humanity that troubles me. You know, where are we going with this geopolitical strategy where countries are trying to exert their hegemony, exert their influence, all for the purpose of a sort of self-serving, you know, like China, for example. You know, I've talked about China, and I try to stay away from politics, but I have to make the observation that you have a very totalitarian government that does not have any use for religion or faith or God or anything. They want everything to be about the state. And I don't want that kind of ideology running the world. And yet it seems that that's the ideology that's having a greater influence on the world today. This idea that there is no truth, there is no God, there is no relativism. I mean, there is relativism. Truth is a construct. I mean, you know, one thing that we learned from the Urantia book is that we got here by trial and error. We've been doing this for 100,000, 200,000 years. Modern man has only been around for 40. And because we've been deprived of the early foundational teachings, the Caligastia rebellion, the Adamic default, you know, we were orphaned. If it were not for the, you know, efforts of Melchizedek in helping to keep truth alive, and the Hebrew nation that helped carry that truth down through the ages, we would probably be in an even worse position. You know, only because the truths of Christendom have survived in the Western Occident, where people value personal liberty and freedom. I mean, if God gives a species free will, and then governments of man don't allow that free will to exist, you have a conflict. But then you have people in the West who have extreme liberty, extreme freedom, and they waste it, and they're still unhappy. And they're not making good use of that liberty and freedom. Our schools are nothing. Think about the way the authors in the Urantia book tell us about how other worlds, more enlightened worlds, and what they teach. And then you look at what we do, and it's just all about turning little children into activists, empowering. You know, the Urantia book writers make a point that one of the key contributing factors to the collapse of Rome was the liberty, the sudden liberty that was given to young men and women. And you ask yourself, because they don't go into the explanation too much. They just say that it was a contributing factor. And that's what we have today. We have young people who have so much liberty, social justice, all of these riots, everything that's going on right now, in my opinion, is because people want to believe in something. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in religion. They don't believe in the afterlife. They believe that those are institutions that no longer serve, and they use extremism and fundamentalism as a way of saying that Christianity is bad too. Since all religions are the same, the religion of Christ is equal to being useless. And so that's why atheism is on the rise. That's why secularism is the standard. Everything in our media, our culture, is all about empowering, right? That's that word. You know, you see it all the time on shows like American Idol and The Voice, where they, even something as innocent as the Kelly Clarkson show, if you've seen it, where they bring these young children and the people that are 7, 8, 9 years old that are doing things, and it's great to congratulate these kids, but it's always about this idea of empowering people, liberating them from their social obligations, like getting married and having children, which are paramount to civilization. Family is the single unit by which everything springs, and we have abandoned that principle in the world today. At least Western culture. You know, I had a conversation with my son, just casually. It's at what point do you decide that you have to make the commitment to a life where you're serving another human being? And that can be your children, that can be your spouse. And kind of going back to the point about the epical revelation that we have, so few people want to hear that this book even exists, and it's because of the way Western society is constructed today. There's no room, there's no point of entry for something like the Arantia book. The only thing I think that makes it so powerful is its revelatory appeal. It does forecast things. It does give us insights into our past. Just reading the parts about early human development will give you a much greater appreciation of how hard it was to get here. You know, we can be angry about things like slavery and all of the things that have happened in our past, but when you read the history of the human race, you have a better understanding of how it is that those things occurred. And so, again, I do these podcasts because I want to be a beacon. I want somebody to find this podcast and learn a little bit about the epical revelation. And maybe not in this decade, maybe it will be the 40s. Maybe it'll be the 50s. And I'm talking 30 years from now. Maybe at that point, you know, maybe if things calm down, if that's possible, maybe if we learn to harness our luxury for intellectual and spiritual development instead of just physical embellishments, maybe there'll be enough of us that will have raised our children with the principles like the Kenites. You know the Kenites? The Kenites, Moses was a Kenite. His ancestry were Kenites, and Kenites can go all the way back to the days of Adam and Eve and Adam's son and Rata. Remember that I think Mary was of Kenite descent, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, we can be the Kenites. The Kenites, you know, we're the new generation. This book is in a million different languages. I wish I spoke some of them so I could at least send greetings, because I know we get a lot of people who are in Finland and in Sweden and Germany, and I haven't had anybody from China, not one listen from China. A lot of people in South America, so thank you. Muchas gracias. You know, we got a little ways to go before there's exponential growth, but, you know, this book can really help this planet. And someday people will start to realize the information in this book is meant to get us forward. And so I'll leave you with that on this update. just a brief update talking about the beacon, and that's what I'm going to call this segment, the beacon. There's a great line in a movie, one of my favorite movies, where the main character, they're out in the stars and they're trying to find planets that have life or that they know have life, but have been taken over by this horrible, horrible species called the Borg, where they turn people into basically machines. And she says, they just stopped looking. That's why we didn't hear their beacon, because they stopped looking for the truth. And so I want to be a beacon so that if you are out there stumbling around trying to see if there's any truth, you might find this podcast and say, hey, he's talking about the truth. That's interesting. So we'll see you again soon. Thank you again for joining me on the Urantia Radio Podcast. Email urantiabookradio@gmail.com and urantiaradio.net, our website. We'll see you again soon.